chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? Today on the show, I'm talking to a baker from Portland, Oregon, named Laura Brannon, or LB. We have a really good talk. She's into some different stuff that I did not know about until we chatted. And so that's coming up in a few minutes. Before then, hey, we need to talk. It's been a long time, hasn't it? Yeah, sorry about that. I've been away for a while. You know, I know I've been away for a while when I start getting emails from folks, and more than one, it's like, hey, are you okay? In these COVID times when folks go dark for a while, people start to get worried, and I'm sorry about that. No, I've been going hard with some paid work. Actually, you did a little bit of paid work for a change, which is nice, very helpful. A lot of hiking and even a little bit of traveling. You know, Cindy, with spring coming, she's like, all right, we need to get out hiking. Let's get a little further afield. So we've been doing more hikes on the weekend around Victoria, more like take a drive out and find a lake and walk around the lake, that kind of thing. Even on the weekend, we went out to a place called Mystic Beach and scrambled over, you know, 2 kilometers of tree roots and mud and hopping on logs and that kind of thing to get to the beach with this amazing waterfall of basically all the runoff that we were trying to avoid on the trail, just kind of falling off a cliff onto the beach and into the ocean. It was so cool. It was really great to see. We've been doing that, so I've been getting my legs in shape. I even went out back to Saskatchewan, got back just this week. It was a really good trip out to see my dad and see Cindy's mom and make sure they're okay. It's been a long winter for my dad, and he's getting older and wasn't doing too much over the winter, but it was good to see him in the spring, and he's up and about, and we helped him get his garden started. A couple planter boxes on the deck is kind of all he can do these days, but we got some tomatoes planted for him and some flowers and stuff, and so he's got something to putter around with at the farm. And got to see some friends, you know, which was nice, and got to, you know, go by the old house and gaze longingly at my brick oven from the car and then just drove by. But, you know, these things happen. I'm a little sentimental about Saskatchewan. I love it out here on Vancouver Island, and I don't regret moving out here at all. But boy, there's something about those skies when you get back to the prairies and everything is just so big, you know, except the people. You know, the people are all far apart. You know, the farms are far apart, that kind of thing. But the land is like huge and the skies are huge, and it's beautiful this time of year out there. And so that was a lot of fun. Like I said, I was doing some paid work as well. I finished up coaching another session of the Alt MBA, also just in the last week or so. And that was a lot of fun. Got to work with some really interesting people on the East Coast of North America. That was sort of the time zone that I was working with. And it was good. But, you know, the thing that I noticed is, holy Dinah, was it a lot of work to do this thing? And that's part of the reason that the podcast kind of fell by the wayside for a few weeks, was because of what I call the emotional labor that you put into coaching, or that I put into coaching. And we all say, oh, it should only be so many hours a week or that kind of thing. But when I'm in the session, I am all in. And when I'm not working with people, I am thinking about it and I'm planning and I'm considering, you know, what folks are going through and how I can help them out and that kind of a thing. And it's all consuming for me. And it's always kind of been like that for me. When we had our bakery, that's all I was thinking about 24/7. You know, it was really tough to even, you know, go for Christmas dinner with the family and talk about things that weren't the bakery. It's like, what are you doing here? You know, this is of no interest to me. I have this obsession called Orange Boot Bakery. And when I'm working on the podcast, it's the same kind of thing. Like on the one hand, yeah, it takes me 7 to 8 hours to put a show together, you know, between setting up an interview and doing it and editing it and recording this intro and posting it and all of that stuff. But emotionally, like I'm all in when I'm in sort of podcast mode. If I have a call today with someone and say it's at 3 in the afternoon, well, I'm done all day long. I'm thinking about the call, prepping about the call, trying to, you know, anticipate where it might go, what we might talk about, that kind of a thing. And I find it really hard to turn that off. And so it's one of the reasons that it's hard for me to send out invitations for new podcast guests is I think I subconsciously know what I'm putting into each show, you know, and that's no different, I don't think, from you at the bakery. Like I know that your customers probably think, oh, you know, how nice to be able to bake for one market per week or two markets per week. But you're all in every day building up for a market day. Or at a retail bakery, you know, it's just this perpetual cycle. You know, you might get one day off to kind of go for a walk and let your head clear. But I know what you're thinking about on the walk. Because that's what I was doing, at least. You know, you'd go out for a walk on Sunday and all you'd be doing is talking about the bakery while you're out for this walk. So it never ends. It was good to take a clean break for a couple of weeks and not think about the podcast, even though I did, but kind of set it aside and go off and do some other things, because I'm kind of refreshed now and I'm kind of, you know, let's get into this and let's do a run of shows now where I can be all in with those shows. So that's kind of where I am at these days. Hey, is this a good time to mention that the Rise Up podcast is listener supported? Sorry, that might be a hard segue in, but it is, you know, that's this podcast works thanks to donations from listeners that support the show. There are a lovely group of people, some beautiful humans that have gone to the website, riseuppod.com, clicked the support the show button, and have either pledged like a one-time donation or a few dollars a month just to keep the show going. And those donations are what pay for all of the hosting, the gear, the audio editing, all of that stuff. And it really is appreciated. I honestly couldn't do the show anymore without the support from listeners, helping keeping it funded and help keeping it going. So if you would like to be part of this, I would really appreciate it. Head on over to riseuppod.com and there's a support the show button right at the top where you can click on that. A few dollars a month makes a huge difference. A lot of people contributing small amounts each really adds up and it really helps me out. So thanks to everyone who's a show supporter. I really do appreciate it. Okay, on to the chat. Laura Brannon, she goes by LB. She goes by LB so much that her bakery is actually called LB's Edibles. And what's interesting about Laura is that she's a cannabis baker. She's making the medicine for people. And I'll be honest with you, I never really thought about cannabis as medicine before. I thought about, you know, the hit, like a mimosa at brunch or my morning coffee or even the sugar rush, you know, of a like a good peach Danish. So I was interested to learn from Laura, like what makes her tick, why she got into this, what it's like to be a baker with cannabis in this day and age. Because I went into this chat with a very, very naive view of the business side of working with cannabis. You know, it's legal in Canada, but heavily regulated. I thought, well, that must be hard. I know it's legal in Oregon, where Laura lives. But there's a lot going on that I had no idea about until we spoke. And there's a lot to baking with cannabis beyond what you and I need to do to open a bakery. And yet there's a lot of similarities as well. And so I think you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. So grab a cookie if you have one. Strap in. This is a fascinating chat with Laura Brannon of LB's Edibles in Portland. I'm curious about LB as being like both your name and the company's name. What's the story there?
So my my name, my legal name is Laura Brannan.
Right.
And I am in my 50s, and there was a TV show on when I was a kid called Happy Days.
Oh, yeah,
and sure. One of the characters was Lori Beth, and everybody called her LB on it. So everybody started calling me LB. And then when I was in high school, I played on a couple sports teams, and one of my coaches thought it was ELBE and put it on the back of my jersey, and it's been ELBE since I was 16.
That's so cool. That's neat to have it stick with you for so long. Because I remember the show. I'm old enough to remember the show too, but nobody was calling me Potsy after a little while, you know?
Yeah, well, I think I've always wanted to be more songs than LB, so but that's who I am. I'm LB.
I'm very glad to meet you. And I'm very, very interested and curious about your, unique bakery here with LB's Edibles. Well, why don't we talk about first sort of what is LB's Edibles? What are you all about and how did you get started?
Okay, well, actually, all those answers kind of go in together. I'm an accidental baker, if that's a thing. I grew up on a farm in Oregon, and I grew up with hippie parents. And so food and recipes have always been part of my life. And I have younger brothers and a dad, and spent a lot of time just kind of baking and doing things like that growing up. Put all that aside, forgot about food, except for in college. I worked the typical college routine of working in restaurants to pay my bills. And so always that was a thing. Food was always about love. Food was always about celebrations in my family and my personal life. But my husband and I, we owned a photography company about 15, 16 years ago. And it was when the first depression hit, 2008, the latest one here, boom broke. And then everybody got camera phones at the same time. And our industry kind of got blown out. Being a photographer wasn't really a thing after 2007. It was a different job, right? And so all of the things that kids do on their phones now, we used to get paid to do, product shots, weddings, and all those things. Well, that kind of went away.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened at the same time that my best friend's mom got breast and lung cancer. And so we were growing weed here in Oregon for ourselves as medical patients. And this is kind of how we get into why our bakery is different. I am a cannabis baker in Oregon. I am the longest running cannabis edible company in Oregon. I will celebrate 12 years on July 1st.
Wow.
So I'm kind of an old lady in this industry, and I'll tell you, it shows. So I'm an accidental baker. As my photography company was kind of slowing down, I started making food for my best friend's mom. And again, this was 13 or 14 years ago. And so back then, cannabis wasn't legal in any state yet, except for medical. It was really on the down low. You had to be really quiet about what you were doing. We had patient cards because we were patients here in Oregon. Even that didn't give you access to any kind of cannabis. It just allowed you to have it and not go to jail. And so, right. And so in Oregon, what you had to do is you had to have a farmer grow weed for you. And then you and that farmer had an agreement, and then you would either get the raw material or maybe they would make it into something for you. But that's how Oregon worked back then. And so it was just a really complicated system, but it was also easier. Anyway, I'm sorry, I digress. So my best friend's mom got sick, and we started making food for her. And because she had lung cancer, we knew she couldn't smoke weed. We knew that she needed to ingest it in a different way. And so I asked her if I could make food for her. And she said yes, but the only requirement was that she didn't want it to taste like weed at all. She just wanted it to taste like good food. And so we just started doing that at home for her. And about 3 or 4 months into it, she said to me, I bet you there's other patients who could really benefit from this. And I kind of had that in the back of my mind. And we got invited to a patient potluck for this thing that was a less harm clinic here in Oregon. And basically what they were doing was trying to get vets and patients off of heavy duty narcotics and use cannabis instead. And so we were very much all about that. But to digress a little bit more, before I was a photographer, I was a jail guard for 15 years here in Multnomah County. So I'd seen the drug war and that it didn't really work. And I've always been a proponent for safe access. So we went to the potluck. And while we were there, some kids came up to us and said, "Hey, this is really good food. Would you consider meeting our boss at a medical dispensary?" We didn't even know what that was.
Right.
And so the next week we met this gentleman named Bo, and he owned this thing called Brothers Cannabis Medical Dispensary. And he was a safe access point for farmers and patients to meet and get their medicine. And he saw my food and he said, LB, there's just a huge need for this. We have so many patients who can't smoke because either they have kids at home or they live in housing that doesn't allow smoking, or they just don't want to smoke because they're sick. Is there any way you'd consider doing this?" And I was like, "Well, sure, why not?" And that decision changed my husband and my life forever. 3 weeks later, we shut down our photography studio and our photography business, and we started making medical edibles in our home. And we could not keep up with the pace. It was such a big need. The first couple of years, we were meeting people in their homes, parking lots, any place that felt safe for them so they wouldn't go to jail. And during that time, Oregon had this big shift, and we started on the ballot. It came up that we were going to legalize cannabis in Oregon, which just happened to be 3 years after we kind of started what we were doing.
Gotcha.
And so that's how this accidental baker and accidental business started. We just started for patients, and then Oregon legalized.
Yeah. Cause I'm trying to relate it to Canada, and I know in Canada, maybe it's been like 4 years or 5 years that it's been legal, you know? And so when I saw that you had, you know, started in 2010, I'm like, okay, like I've sort of been following the progression here, but it's like, my dates are getting confused. Yeah. Well, and that sounds like a really, you know, typical like legal minefield, right? Like you were right in a gray zone where it's like,
where
it's legal to have it, or you had the license to have it, but you had to go find it. And
well, it was even scarier than that.
Yeah.
We were in the medical days, we were allowed by the state to make food for patients or grow weed for patients. We were not allowed to charge them anything for our services. And so it went on this thing called the donation theory. And mm-hmm. so I would go to my patients and I would donate X amount of food to them. And then they would give me a generous donation to cover my costs for my flour and my sugar and all of that.
Yeah.
It did not work out very well often. There was a lot of hurt feelings along the way. And so I think probably legalizing it was obviously the best scenario to keep people out of jail. It's also a really great way to start an industry. But I will tell you, going back in time, I would maybe make some different choices about how I viewed legalizing cannabis in Oregon. Because while I did start out really lucky, none of my peers that I started with are still in this industry because the rules, the regulation, and the cost to do business are not anything that we thought it would be. It's okay. Outrageous. And because we're still federally illegal, we're not allowed normal rules, like because it's still federally illegal in our country, I'm not allowed to have a bank account. Well, can you imagine running a bakery without a bank account? Can you imagine running a bakery without a credit card or a line of credit or people who are willing to work only in cash? It's very challenging. It is heartbreaking most days. And so I don't know that I would tell myself to, if I went back in time, to go ahead and do this. Now that I'm in it and doing it and still trying to break down some of the barriers, this is going to be my life's work.
Right.
But it's definitely some of the joy has gone.
Sure.
Because the joy of making food, right?
Yeah. Because it's like your business is, you know, feeding people or making them comfortable or like, you know, providing the medicine, that kind of a thing. But your mission seems to be also making this a legitimate business. Or in the eyes of the regulators, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. We're considered dirty drug dealers still in our country and in our state.
Yeah.
So even when we were back in the medical days, we were getting letters from the federal government that told us to cease and desist what we were doing, or we were going to go to federal prison.
Right.
Now, we lived in a state and in a county in that state that said, we will protect you and we will not let this happen to you. And we went on that faith. And so that was fine. And so we were protected that way. But once we went to state regulations, every state in the United States has different rules about cannabis. Mm-hmm. There's no interstate transfer. So I can't make my goods in Oregon and sell them in Washington state,
right?
Because that's federally illegal. And then, like I said, we're not allowed bank accounts. And so when you're not allowed bank accounts, what happens is you end up paying premiums for things, right?
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have a line of credit, you have to pay premiums. And then the other thing about it is that you're also, I try to explain it this way. You're building a plane as you're flying it.
Yep.
Right? Because there's no template in Oregon for a cannabis bakery. And so we made up the rules as we went along. And I was on the rules advisory committee for the state. But I have to tell you, the truth is that cannabis food is not respected in this state. And it is barely trusted that we can grow weed and turn it into joints. That's okay. But once we start putting it into food or drinks, the parents, the teachers, the doctors, the lawyers, they come after us. They are so terrified a child will get a piece of my food that they've made it almost impossible for me to make my food, which is very sad.
Yeah.
Because I love making food and I love making it so it doesn't taste like weed and I love making it beautiful. But just the packaging alone that I'm required to use is not conducive for food.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because sticking a piece of cake in a tube.
Yeah. You're making, well, and because I was on your website and you've got, you know, some, you know, lovely looking cake balls, some lovely looking cookies, you know, that kind of thing. But it never dawned on me that it's like all the rest of us are, how can we put our products in beautiful little packages so that they're with eye appeal and that kind of thing.
We're not allowed that.
Yeah, because what I hear from you is like, oh yeah, you've got folks saying we can't make it look good because it's like on a pack of cigarettes, right? You know,
right?
You've got to make it look horrid. Yeah,
we can't make it appealing to children.
Yeah,
we can't use anything that's a cartoonish type.
Sure.
You know, logo, and then it has to be in child resistant packaging. Now, if you think that there is food packaging in the world that was already made that's child resistant, you would be mistaken.
Right.
There is no packaging anywhere in the world that is child resistant and also safe to put food in.
Yeah.
And so then we had to come up with, okay, well, we're going to put our food in the packaging that's allowed. How do we do that? So I had to take my beautiful cakes and cupcakes, turn them into basically a cake pop, a cake ball, coat it in a candy coating so then it would have shelf stability so it would last in the dispensaries, because we're not allowed to sell out of our bakery. I make my food here in my bakery, and then we self-distribute. There's about 500 or 600 dispensaries in Oregon, and we're in about 350 of those. So we are really unique in Oregon, how we do it. My company is very different from most of the edible companies in Oregon. They make gummy bears or things like that, because those are super easy to make at a co-packing company. And then you slap your label on it. There's maybe a handful of us, maybe under six of us in Oregon, that actually make our food in-house and then get it out to the consumer. And so what we do here at LB's is I single source all of my cannabis flower from one farm, and that's Doghouse Farms here in Oregon. They are a powerhouse. They're an amazing company, amazing farms. In fact, they're in many states now, but they make sure that I have the best buds and the best sugar leaf. And they get that to me every couple of weeks. And then my husband, who is my CEO, he turns all of that delicious cannabis into canna butter, which we make here in-house, which is also something that most edible companies across the nation don't use. Most companies use extracts or distillates because they're really cheap Okay. And they're really easy to shove into gummies or hard candies. We have chosen the hardest route to do. And we make our canna butter in-house. And from that canna butter, I make baked goods. I make cake balls, candies, cake bombs. I have 3 new cookies coming out next month. And then we take all of our own food. It gets sent off to the lab. The labs give us our results. And then that lets the state let us sell it if it comes into the results the state requires. And then I have a salesperson in-house. And then I have 2 delivery people in-house. And so we make the butter, make the food, put it in the packages, put the packages in the coolers, put the coolers on the van, and we take it directly to the dispensaries. And right. That is a very unique model. No other company in Oregon is doing that. And I would say it's probably because it's really hard to do that way. And it's not really cost effective either.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're keeping everything in-house here.
Yeah. Cause that's so fascinating. Cause it's like on the one hand, you know, it's like, okay, well, this is like Mrs. Fields cookies and you're doing wholesale
right.
and you're all over the state and you've got some hard boundaries
yes.
like the state of Oregon and that is it. But I kind of get it with the wholesale thing, but the thought of, oh, I have to take it to the lab. And so,
right.
and what does the, well, okay. So I'm really curious because I'm,
okay.
I don't know anything about that. Like where I am in Canada, like we have cannabis shops popping up, you know, all over town. And
sure.
I've been in a couple and it's like, okay, I can get the plants. I can get them made into joints and I see gummies. I haven't seen anything else, but you know, I'm just kind of like, what's going on here? Like,
right.
It's all kind of
it's overwhelming.
Yeah,
I will tell you, I work in the industry and I cannot keep up with all the new products and the new ways to consume. So I understand as a consumer, it's very confusing and it's overwhelming. I get it.
And so, and so what are you getting from the grower then? And tell me about and this transfer into canna butter. What's up with that?
Okay. So in Oregon, this is how it works. You can have 3 licenses. You can have a producer, which is a grower or a farmer. They produce the medicine, the cannabis. You have a processor, which is what I am. I'm taking the raw material and I'm turning it into something. And then we have our retail shops. Now you can have all 3 of those licenses and be vertically integrated. But we are truly the smallest fish in Oregon. I have been around the longest, but my crew is 8 people. And I compete against companies that have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of employees.
Wow.
Right. And so like the big companies here are, there's big name gummy companies, and I'm not even going to name them because they just put me out of business every day, and big name chocolate companies. And those 2 companies, they sell the mass of edibles in Oregon. And they do that because they can produce at a really high, quantity, and their cost is really low. See, so here's the problem with food in Oregon and edibles is the canna. Because I said that we're still federally illegal, we fall under this thing called 280E. Besides not having a bank, none of the companies, by the way, can have banks, not the dispensaries, not the farmers, and not all of us. So, right. So you have this giant industry with tens of thousands of employees and millions of dollars of industry every quarter. And we're not allowed banks. So that's very complicated. Now, because we're not allowed banks and because we're still federally legal, we fall under this thing called a tax guideline of 280E. And basically it was made for mafia days. It says that it's ill-gotten gains. If you are making money that is federally prohibited, you're not allowed to write anything off of your taxes.
Oh.
So you know how your bakery, you can write off all your stuff?
Totally.
Your employees? I cannot write off any of that.
Oh, wow.
So my tax rate's about 60%.
So they'll tax you.
So the retailers have to pay that same thing. And so does my farmer. So none of us are making money.
Oh,
now,
gosh.
The only way the retail store can stay open is that they have to charge 100 to 150% up on my product.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So what other industry can you imagine that working in? Like to a tire manufacturer, you might have a 20% markup. In the grocery store, most of your products in there are anywhere from 10 to 33% markup. So I have to sell my product cheap enough to my dealer, my dispensary, so that they can sell it cheap enough to the consumer so the consumer will keep buying it, which means that my 2 to 3% margins are now no margins at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so it's really, really tricky. So why am I still doing this? I don't know. I really don't, because we're 12 years in yet and we're still not really making money. And I mean that truly. And I don't know. There's all this fallacy about how we're just making millions of dollars in the industry. I am one of the oldest persons in this industry. I have been around since the beginning. None of my peers are making money. We're all driving cars that are 15 years old. We're all paying ridiculous amount of taxes. And I think we're all just hoping that if it federally goes legal and they allow banking, then our businesses will be worth something at that point. And we're all just so far into it now that we're just kind of holding. But I just see people leaving my industry every day, which makes me so sad, because what the opportunities in Oregon for baked goods or just food and cannabis are outrageous if they would just allow us. We have this whole farm to table living here. We have the best ingredients in the nation growing here. We have fresh fruits and fresh seafood and fresh meats, and to infuse that with cannabis would be amazing. To have it in restaurants would be amazing. To have situations where you could go to a cannabis farm like you can do a winery here and have tastings and dinners, that would be fantastic. But they're just absolutely not going to let us do that. So it's sad.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
This has turned into a bummer. You know, I really do love my job. It's just talking about the nuts and bolts of working in the cannabis industry are just really sad and depressing. So,
because of that, gray zone, that's kind of, you know, cause my mind is just racing here. I'm like, okay, like, are you allowed to do like, our equivalent would be like a provincial credit union. Can you like start your own bank or?
So there is a bank here in Oregon that's a cannabis bank, but again, no credit cards, loans.
Yeah. You don't have to meet on a bridge, do you?
Well, you have to pay for somebody like me. I would have to pay at least $500 a month just to be a member there. And that's a wage here for me, for one of my employees.
Yeah, right?
And that's a part-time wage. And so for a struggling small mom and pop like us, we can't even afford the cannabis bank. And so we're, you know.
That's so wild.
It's pretty wild.
You know, because like it's funny, you know, I've learned a lot over the years talking to different bakers, just about how like sort of different regulations, like, so if you're just a regular old cake baker, mm-hmm. and you want to go to a farmer's market, depending mm-hmm. on where you live, right. the rules are completely different, you know, like where you can make it, where you can take it, all of that stuff.
Does it have eggs in it?
Even
in the States here, our edibles, Washington State, which is just right north of me, you're not allowed to sell any edibles that have dairy products in it. So I wouldn't be able to sell my can of butter products in Washington State. Right. So every state, and then some states you can have, like right now, our limit was 50 milligrams and they just moved it to 100 milligrams because other states were 100 milligrams. It's just every state is different. And so even trying to think about that as a business owner, would I want to pick up and move to another state? Boy, I'd have to. Oh, boy. You know, that's a whole new set of lawyers. And, you know, yeah. But that said, I will say this. For an accidental business, for something that I had no idea I would be doing, I still pinch myself, because what I'm doing, I know, is a really rare air also. How many canna butter bakers are there in the world that are legally doing what I'm doing? Probably not that many. You know, and when I think about that, when I think about the fact that I'm really on at the beginnings of this, I really am happy about that. I'm really happy that somebody like myself was offered an opportunity to start out as a mom and pop. I don't think that in the United States anymore, and I'm not sure about Canada, I don't think there's very many opportunities for small mom and pops or mom and moms or pop and pop businesses to start in the cannabis industry. Most of the states now are requiring that you have a huge amount of money in a bank account before you can get your license. There's all of these regulations about that because, to be honest, a lot of people lost every single penny they had in the first 5 years of this, you know? And so there are some new regulations that prevent some of that or even prevent those people from going in. But I do feel really lucky that I'm one of the few people that got to start in my kitchen and go all the way to legal recreational cannabis. So, you know, there's that.
Because that's what I kind of noticed here is that, you know, my wife and I aren't able, like we're not going to just go down to the corner, lease a space and put our shingle up, right? Like it's sort of the regulations to open up a retail establishment.
Yeah.
Require you to have an awful lot of capital, like a lot of capital to be granted the license. It became the thing was getting the license. Cause I do remember that when it opened up here, places were like building out their spaces and they had applied for a license and they were kind of in the process for a license and then were paying their lease down for 2 years until it got through the regulations that they could get their license. And it was, can I get my license before I run out of money and have to close
up? That happened to us. We built our bakery and then they delayed edibles for 6 months after recreational cannabis. So they let everybody else sell everything first before edibles and also in Oregon, how it was set up is you had to have, to get your license, you had to have a working SOP, meaning your bakery had to have all of its SOPs in place. You had to have staff in place, and then you could get your license, which was 8 months of us paying people to do nothing. 8 months of standing around waiting for it to be okay for us to get our first products out. And I will tell you that almost ended me. That was a lot. You're right. And it's really, really unfair that you can't just develop a product in a home bakery or in a professional kitchen even and bring it to a company and be like, hey, do you want to try this for your edible company? We're not even allowed that either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're right. The frustration is big. And then there's a lot of things that people don't think about. We call it the cannabis tax. So imagine that you have a delivery van and you go to insurance and insure it. And then you tell your insurance carrier that you're going to be carrying cannabis and cash in it. Are they going to allow you to have insurance on your van anymore? No, they're going to cancel you or they're going to charge you a huge premium.
Oh dear. And I'm thinking from a branding perspective, you don't, it's like, it'd be like having Rob Me put on your...
we have no branding on our vehicles we're a cash industry. So when my delivery person drives to the other side of the state, and let's say it's a big delivery day and they pick up $10,000 of cash, they're driving all over the state of Oregon with $10,000 of cash in their van.
Oh my good God.
And your heart is just beating until they get back because you know, they have to spend the night at hotels because our state is very large.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so now I'm sending out an employee in a vehicle full of cannabis products. And then they go to their first stop and they trade out the cannabis products for cash. So now they have cash and cannabis products. And then every stop, it's more cash, less cannabis, but it's still a big target. And believe me, we have had massive thefts here. We have had dispensaries that because they know we're cash and because there's, I'm sure you've seen in the news, especially in Portland, Oregon, there's not a lot of cops anymore. And so they just go in and they rob you at gunpoint and there's nothing anybody can do. And also we're not insured. So you can't get your cash. What are you going to call your insurance company and go, hey, somebody just took $10,000 worth of weed and they just took like your insurance company is like, no, ma'am, we do not insure that.
Oh my God. Oh,
so there's all these things that you don't think about when you go into business. You know, and then also having to explain to your employees, you want to work in cannabis, you're not allowed to get high here. I'll lose my license if you come to work high.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
We're not allowed to consume on premises. So even tasting my food as I'm making it, I'm not allowed to do.
Sure.
So there's just different things you have to think about.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah.
So that said, I am the most popular baker around because they're like, whenever I show up, people are like, did you bring any of those cookies with you? No, I did, girl. So yeah, it's a very, very challenging, you know, being a baker is creative and fun and has its own challenges with baking and body work and all of those things and employees and all that. That said, add that little cannabis sprinkle on top and you're going to have an exciting career. It's just going to keep you up at night screaming.
And so the butter then, like when you cook with it, is it like the can of butter that you make?
Yeah.
Is it like butter? Like, do you use it? You use it like butter in your product?
Yes. And okay. So what we do is we do a very old fashioned method, and my husband has like 32 steps. It takes about 2.5 days. But it really is like the very oldest way of making cannabis butter. And it's using heat and water and weed and butter. And basically it's the crock pot method. And he's been doing this now for like 15 or 16 years for me. He's developed a way to get the most concentrated butter he can possibly get. It is the greenest. So usually it tests around 35 grams per gram, milligrams per gram. And so that's how strong my butter is. And so say the recipe calls for, you know, 226 grams of butter. I use probably, let's say, 112 grams of canna butter. And then the other is regular butter.
Got it.
Right.
Okay. Yep.
And so every recipe is different. And so what we do is every time my husband's name is Hovering. Every time he makes butter, we send off a piece of that butter to the lab. Mm-hmm. The lab sends us back the results and tells us how concentrated it is. And then he has these calculations where he knows, I always use this amount of butter in this recipe and it's this strong this time. So for this batch, you're going to need 118 grams. And
sure.
The next batch, you're only going to need 112. And then, you know, depending on how strong the butter is.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And then it has been a labor of love for the two of us, just tweaking all of our recipes and tweaking how he makes the butter. Every time he makes it, I think he makes it a little bit better. And so it's, for me, it's the best, the reason we keep it in-house and because Hub is doing it is the main reason. I get this really clean, pure butter because my infuser, the person who's making my can of butter, he is also working in the bakery with me. So he makes sure that there's no leaf, there's no dirt, there's no particulates. His process is the cleanest process I've ever seen. And so it makes it so much easier for me. Because what I specialize in is that my food has no cannabis flavor. I'm one of the really few people in the edible industry who can say that and really stand behind it. I can't stand the taste of cannabis. I do not like it at all. And so for me, I only want to make products that I'm going to eat, right? And so none of my products have cannabis flavor. If they do, your palate is super sensitive and I bow to you because I work really, really hard to make sure that that's not a thing. And so he works really, really hard to make sure that my butter is delicious and pure and I don't have to work that hard.
That's like the critical piece of the process. And so you want to make sure that you've got as much control over that as possible, right?
Like it really is. And it's the part that if we mess up that calculation, if he doesn't give me the right number of butter and then something comes in, we call it too hot. So our cookies are 50 milligrams of cannabis in them. The state says I'm allowed the tiniest margin of error. So let's say that came in at 52 grams per cookie. I wouldn't be able to sell those. I would have to throw those all away. And we've had that happen. And that's a $10,000 to $20,000 mistake when you have to throw out because you know, every cookie is X amount of dollars. And we run our batches between 2,500 and 3,500, depending on if it's cookies or cake balls. We do that to keep our costs down. But you can imagine if you mess that up, how expensive
that
is.
Yep, absolutely. No, absolutely.
And also, here's the other thing that's really interesting about working in cannabis is we are not allowed to burn cookies and throw them in the trash can. That is real, my friend. Let me tell you what we have to do. If we have anything that we burn or go bad, or anything that's waste, anything that goes past its best by date, I have to bring it into a container in the middle of my bakery where all my video cameras are. And on video camera, I have to destroy every piece of food with salt and detergent. And then I have to set that nasty mess under a video camera for 72 hours before I can throw it in the garbage.
Oh my God.
Every piece of waste in Oregon is accounted for at our bakery. It is a seed to sale system. And so you're not allowed to throw anything in the garbage cans. They don't want people eating out of them, of course. And it has to be destroyed in an unedible manner, which is infuriating to me because there are so many patients out there that would take food that was close to the Best Buy date for free. There are so many vets in need. It is infuriating that, you know how
yep.
it is.
Nobody
nobody wants to throw out food, and this food has drugs in it. It makes me super angry.
I'm curious about sort of the effect that you're shooting for with your edibles. And
that is a great question.
I'm confused about CBD and THC, to be honest with you. And so
I can give you like a little 101.
Yeah, they give me the little primer. Yeah.
Okay. So the cannabis plant has like over 300 different parts to it. The part you always hear about is THC. So the THC is on the little crystally part of the plant, and it's in its natural form, it's THCA. It's an acid. When you add a flame to it or heat to it, in our case, when we cook it for the can of butter or when you light a joint, you change that acid to a neutral, and that's THC. That's the psychotropic part of the plant, one of the psychotropic parts of the plant. So also in the plant, there's things like THV, THG, CBD, CBN, CBG. There's all of these parts of the plants, and all of those parts have a different personality, basically, or a different thing that they do in the plant. And so when you hear somebody say that a plant has 17% THC and 3% CBD, you know what the plant has. That's kind of a mid-range plant, and the CBD is like so what the THC is, a psychotropic. What the CBD does, it's anti-inflammatory, it's like a muscle relaxer, it's a healing property also.
Gotcha.
And so some parts of the plant are made for pain reduction. Some parts of the plant are made for anti-inflammatories. Some make you not nauseous anymore. This plant is so connected with the human body. In the human body, you have cannabinoid receptors all under your skin that are already naturally there. And so the plant will react to your body, right? Okay, so THC and CBD, those are just two of the parts of the plant, but those are the parts you hear about all of the time.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so when you go into a dispensary, really your budtender can kind of help you if you tell them what you're looking for. Like, are you needing to get out of pain? Are you needing to sleep? Are you just wanting to get out of your head a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
That's all of the things you can do while you're smoking THC. When you're consuming it, when you're eating it, it's a very different situation.
Oh, okay.
It's a very different situation. So the reason I make canna butter is I want all of the parts of the plant in the butter. I don't want a single part of the plant not to be in my butter. Most of your gummies and your other candies, they're made with extracts or distillates. So they're only extracting the THC, or they're only extracting the CBD, or maybe some other minor parts of the plants.
Gotcha.
They're also extracting terpenes, which, you know, there's terpenes in cooking. It's the same thing. Are you familiar with terpenes?
No.
So like in a lemon has a terpene, which is the oil and the smell, and it's called a limine terpene.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So cannabis also has limine.
Gotcha.
So cannabis has like seven different, like, you know, just very much like wine. There's gassy, there's woodsy, there's grassy, there's all these kind of flavor profiles in weed, and those are all from the different terpene.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Now we're going down an area that I'm not an expert in, but that's your basic 101. When you get to edibles though, edibles are a different thing. So when you smoke weed, it goes in as Delta 9. When you take it into your body in edible forms, it's just I don't know how to explain this other than it's a body high versus a head high. So when you eat edibles, what we are always trying to tell people so they know their perfect amount is you should feel loose in your hips.
Mm-hmm.
You should feel an overall good feeling, and you should kind of have a slight warm grin on your face. That is somebody who is perfectly dosed on edibles. Anything more than that, you're really high and you're going to be kind of fighting it. A lot of times people get in trouble. They try an edible for the first time and they have a completely bad trip. Mm-hmm. It is because often they've had an edible after getting brave by having alcohol. If I could get one thing across in this podcast for your listeners, especially people who are new to edibles, do not mix all in edibles. Please, please, please do not do that. You are not going to feel good. And it's for the very simple reason that when you take an edible in, that molecule change that I was telling you about, that happens in your renal system, in your kidney, and your kidneys and your liver. That's where all of that mechanism is going on. When you're drinking alcohol, you're also taxing your liver and your kidneys and breaking down the insulin and the sugar. And so what happens is when you have an edible and alcohol at the same time, you get really sweaty. You start feeling overwhelmed and you're probably going to feel paranoid. That is not a good night, people. That is not how we want you to spend your time on cannabis. So we always tell people, if you absolutely cannot not drink, please eat your edible first, wait about 2 hours, and then have a drink. Because then by then your body will already be metabolizing your edible. And by the time the alcohol hits, everything will be fine and you won't be feeling panicky. Also, if you wait an hour or two, you're probably not going to need that drink.
Right. Yeah.
You're just not. And so that's the big thing. So an edible high is loosen the hips, kind of a warm, general, great feeling, and then kind of a smile on your face. The reason that we really love edibles, we're in our 50s, and we hear from a lot of our peers. I don't have any kids, but a lot of my friends have kids and grandkids at this point. And so what we always hear back from them is they can eat like a cookie or half of my cookie, and then they can get on the floor and play with their grandkids for hours.
Right.
Because they feel great. Their imagination is loose. They're not feeling stressed and their body's moving. And so that's really where we think the benefit from edibles come. We always tell people we want our edibles to enhance your life, not take you away from your life. I'm not wanting people to get so high they sit on their couch and drool. Although I do think there's a place for that, especially in the world we live in some days. I'm okay with that. But really what I want it to do is enhance your life. I want you to, after you eat one of my cookies or cake balls, I want you to be able to go out and mow your lawn and feel comfortable. A lot of people exercise on edibles. A lot of marathon runners love edibles for that. A lot of power lifters love edibles because you just recover faster. I know for me, one of the things I love to do more than anything is I eat about 30 milligrams of a cookie and then I'll swim. And mm-hmm. I can swim longer and I'm not as distracted and I enjoy the water in a different way. It's just a different feeling in your body.
I gotcha. Yeah. Well, no, I'm really glad I asked that because I guess that's the, I have a friend, a buddy of mine in Ottawa that is a pastry chef and a cook. And when it was first legalized in Canada, he was working with a fella to try and teach people how to cook with cannabis, I guess is the thing, right?
Yes.
And we talked about it back then too, because I was trying to get my head around my narrow perception was it's helpful if you're in a lot of pain, like from a pure medicinal point of view, uh-huh. or it's like a party thing. Right.
Oh, but, no, I think there's a whole gray area.
Exactly. And there's a whole, exactly. And that's what I wanted to learn more about. And he was trying to explain that to me as well. Right. It's like, well, you have a really good meal and you're going to have a glass of wine with that meal and you feel good. Same. This is what he's talking about. And then it sounds like that's exactly what you're talking about as well.
It's a real enhancement.
It's an enhancer. Yeah.
I think one of the greatest things I find about it, we've been doing this for so many years now. I've certainly catered weddings. I've done dinners. I've done all kinds of things with cannabis enhancement. And one of the things I've noticed is when I was a photographer, we shot a lot of weddings. And when people are drinking, what happens in a social situation is you have one or two really loud people and everybody else kind of sitting back and watching, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
What's great about a cannabis event is, especially if you serve it as an hors d'oeuvre, a microdose, and we call a microdose about 5 grams, 5 milligrams,
right,
or 10 milligrams. So if you give that like around appetizer time or put it in a mocktail, about a half an hour later, everyone is talking.
Okay.
And they're all just enjoying each other. It's just a different, there's not that kind of, nobody's like jumping off the roof into the pool situation. It's more like it lets down your social guard. We always think of it as a bridge. You know, when people are smoking a joint together, they kind of stand closer together. When people are eating edibles or drinking mocktails with cannabis in it, it's the same thing. You're kind of just sitting close and you're just talking and you're not really worried about the things that you walked in the door with. And also, you can still drive your car at the end of the night, which is really important to us, right? We don't want that to be a problem. And so, yeah, we think it should be in weddings. We think it should be in hotel rooms. One of the big problems we have here in Oregon is we grow some of the best weed in the nation. We're on the West Coast. We've been growing for hundreds and hundreds of years here. Our generational farmers do an amazing job. And people come here to buy weed as a tourist. But then they can't smoke it anywhere. We don't have any public smoking areas.
Right.
You can't smoke in a hotel. You can't smoke in your rental car. You can't smoke in a park. You can't smoke at the river. It's just, and so we're hoping that all of that will shift. So that's kind of where I'm focusing my work now with cannabis is I felt like I've done my job with the state, helping set up the rules and kind of being, you know, helping usher that in. Now my focus is how do I get the people in Oregon, the legislatures, the city officials to understand that it is a grown-up adult choice and that we should be able to have adult smoking bars just like we have liquor bars. We should be able to have cannabis events like we have alcohol events. You know, we have this country is really into sports ball and it's not my favorite thing about this country, right? Is that everything's so athletically, everything's about the pro sports teams.
Right.
But here we have this thing called the Rose Garden, which is where the Trailblazers play. And you can go there and you can have bourbon, you can have wine, you can have kombucha, you can have everything that you want there, except an edible or a cannabis cocktail. And I guarantee you, I would start going to sport events if the people I was sitting next to were stoned instead of drunk.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So my life's work from this point on is socialization, normalization. How can we in Oregon, how can I in the States, how can we figure out a way to have social consumption be acceptable? Because, you know, even at this age, my husband and I are traveling, you know, we're starting to travel more. We're starting to think about retirement. The first thing I do when I'm going someplace is I look to see if there's any cannabis events or how can I get cannabis where I'm going? And it's just a no-go in most places, right? And so I would love for people to be able to travel and go to hotels where they can smoke weed or restaurants where they can smoke weed and have it be part of their vacation.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's getting it, getting the stigmas kind of, you know, the 40, 50 years of stigmas kind of removed and, mellowed out as well, you know?
Right. You know, and I think that's one of the things that I can really help with is here I am. At this age, I run a business 12 years in. I'm 54 years old. I have a great crew. I have a great team. I get stoned all day long and I can still run my business, right? And so that's one of the things that hopefully time will show that everybody can do this, can do what they want to do and still smoke weed. You can still have a stable life. You're not going to be living in the streets. It's not going to be an after school special for anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, we're most people, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And that's the thing, right? It's like but you can't do that without education.
I'll tell you what you can't do it without. You can't do it without advertisements.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the big thing. It's marketing, right? I just did a podcast recently with one of my news channels here in Oregon, and he's like, you know, he's asking like, you know, why is it being such a rough go here in Oregon with cannabis? And I'm like, because your news channel, I've invited a dozen times to come to my bakery and you go to wineries and you go to bars and you go to everything, but you will not show up. You are not normalizing this industry. And he goes, oh, you're blaming us. I go, you're the media. Like, come to a cannabis dispensary. Like, we have 420 every year. That's a big holiday. Never celebrated.
Right.
No, we don't show it in our commercials for Oregon tourism. You aren't normalizing it in any way. And he's like, wow, you're really catching me off guard. And I'm like, you know, I have been, this is a really good example. We have, you know, the big food industry, conventions just like anybody else down here. And so every year we have the big food and wine one here where, you know, for vendors where they come in to sell you your products. And every year, Oregon Hotel and Restaurant Association has a giant booth there. Mm-hmm. And for 10 years in a row, I walked up and I said, "Hi, I'm LB. I own a cannabis bakery. I'd love to be part of your association." "Absolutely not. No, thank you. We're not interested." Well, during COVID, they reached out and asked if I would like to make a giant donation and join their association. I said, "No, thank you. No, thank you very much." You know, and it was just really insulting that all the restaurants in Oregon were closing, in Portland, all of the stores were closing, and we were an essential company. And then they decided that we could possibly come up with $10,000 to join their association. I'm like, "You're out of your minds."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because if your industry is one that nobody talks about or nobody feels comfortable talking about, or, you know, there's that sort of a secret and stuff, like you're never going to get ahead, right? Even if it's legal, you're not,
no.
If it's legal and not accepted, there's right. a big problem, right? Yeah. I see.
And I think as our neighbor, you understand that our country right now doesn't know what it's doing with itself anyway. So asking people to get behind cannabis when there's much bigger problems going on in our state and our country, I get it. Nobody has the bandwidth for it either. Like, "Oh, you poor drug dealer. Listen, I'm just a cookie lady. That's all I am. You know, I'm just a cookie lady." And they're like, no. And so I get it why people aren't behind it. I get why I'm fighting 50 years or 100 years of bad marketing. And I also understand that truly people just have so many other things to worry about right now. And so, you know, I'll just stand over here and keep doing my little fight, you know.
Yes, and right. Because right. I just want to acknowledge that, though, because, you know, when I talk with bakers with different product lines, it's the same kind of a thing. You know, I'm just trying to sell a cookie at the farmer's market.
Right.
And I'm putting a commercial dishwasher in my basement, or like that hasn't really happened. But you know what I mean, right? Like
you're trying to
navigate a minefield of rules that was built for heavy industry. And you're like, I just want to bring up a tray of cookies out, right? It's a different thing.
And the truth about all of this is, whether it's cannabis or legal food, is that all of those rules are made up to make it harder on us. And the people who follow those rules, they don't get their cookies on the table. It's the people who break the rules who get their cookies on the table. And that's the frustrating part, because there are whole parts of our industry who just ignore all of the rules and regulations, and they'll just pay the fine when they get caught. And I think that's really hard for the people who have like that moral compass intact. Like, you know, we always said from the beginning of this, when we started our company, I sat down with my husband and the employees who started, and I said, "This is going to be very challenging. This is going to be, we're going to have a lot of spotlights on us because we're one of the first companies to get licensed." And I said, "I need us to wear white hats in this industry. We must be above breaking rules. We must be above it all. Like, it's going to be harder. It's going to cost us more money, but we're going to wear the white hats." And so we didn't break any rules. Mm-hmm. And for the last 5 years, I have watched companies in my state break rule after rule and just zoom past me. And so they get caught and they pay big fines because they can afford to. I'm not in that position. I have to follow the rules. And so I get it. I am so in touch with that baker who's just trying to get some damn jam on a table at the county, right? The county farmer's market. I am in tune with that person. It shouldn't be this hard. As I tell people all the time, it shouldn't be this hard to be this poor.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Oh my God.
Food is already a crazy industry. And anybody who's in food, I feel like they're doing it because they have to. There's a drive inside of them, because a sane person doesn't do this. A really sane, methodical person, when they look about working in the food industry, the long hours, the constant problems with supply chains, the constant problems with the fads of food. "Oh, you make gluten, you killer? Like, what? No, no, ma'am. Like, it's okay. I get it. I get you have a problem with it." But like, really, truly, like every food fad that has changed in the last 3 to 5 years and 5 years before that, you're always battling somebody's perception about what you do. And so honestly, I feel like there's no difference between cannabis baking and anybody who's trying to get into food in any way, trying to get things on the shelf. It is really hard. And I don't think that a baker who is in that position is not spending the same amount of crying that I do. You know, you wake up and you're so frustrated because how do you make the bills meet and how do you keep making great food? And how do you, you know, one of the things that I have not done is I have not gone down in my products. I use really premium products. It is harder every month to stick with that because, you know, butter went from $60 a case here to $147 a case last week. And, you know, that is, whew, and I'm not, can't just raise our prices here. That's not how cannabis works. You are, it doesn't matter that I put eggs and flour and sugar in my edibles. My edibles have to cost the same as the person that's making a gummy bear with some Jell-O and sugar. Right? Because it's because the customer demands a certain price for a certain dose. They don't care what is around it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's dollars divided by milligrams or the other way around. Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha.
So what I am in the very unique position is I am one of the most expensive edibles in the state. I am at the top of the shelf and I set my prices at the beginning and I haven't gone down or gone up. Everyone else has kind of been bouncing around me. The reason I get away with it is I'm one of the very few companies that's doing fresh baked food. And so the dispensaries are able to use that as a selling point on why mine's more expensive. Also, a can of butter, which is a full spectrum effect, meaning you're going to get higher from it than you are from a gummy bear. The dispensaries are able to sell that aspect of it too. If I didn't have those two things, if I didn't have the uniqueness of canna butter and the uniqueness of fresh baked foods, I would be forced to lower my prices even more right now because everybody's racing to the bottom in my industry. And I mean that people are in Oregon, you will spend more money for a cup of coffee from Starbucks than you will spend on a 50 or 100 milligram gummy bear that will get you.
Oh, interesting.
But that's really how it is. So let's just say you can get a 50 milligram gummy for like, you know, $10 out the door.
Yeah.
That will get you high for hours and hours and hours. You can spend the same amount of money on a coffee at Starbucks in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. And I feel like the food with the cannabis in it should be more expensive than a burger.
Yeah.
Or a gummy, but it's just, we're just can't do it. The consumer will not pay for it.
Interesting. Oh, wow. Wow.
See, that's the thing, you know, also being on the West Coast weed has been available for 100 years. You've always been able to find weed from your neighbor or your uncle or your cousin. You know, it's always been really, really cheap here on the West Coast. The same is even in recreational edibles now. So my products that I sell here for, let's say, $24 going out the door, and you can do the math of how much I have to sell it to the dispensary so they can make 150% on that.
Yeah.
That same edible in Indiana or New York is going to be double the cost.
Right.
But not here in Oregon, because Oregon, there's so much weed and there's so much black market here that our customers can easily go to their uncle, their cousin, instead of going to a dispensary. And so that's, you know, yeah. Yay, you live in the state where all the weeds grow. Ooh, you live in the state where all the weeds grow.
So I guess then what keeps you going? What keeps you pushing forward on this? Because there's some real constraints that you've got to work within.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, this fall I was gonna give up. I was against the ropes. It had been 11 years. And, you know, the last 2 years in COVID have been really, as you know, there's no employees. We're doing it all in-house. I think I worked when we sent all of our employees home March 11th, when it all started. And I don't think I had a single day off for like 9.5 months. We worked 7 days a week. And so, yeah. And so by the time this fall hit, my husband and I had not been on a vacation in 7 years, real talk. Not even had a weekend off. We have had one day off for 12 years. And most of the times we're still working 7 days a week. So when we went on our vacation in the fall, as we flew out, I said to my husband, I said, I don't think I can do this anymore. I don't know if I'm going back to the bakery. And he's like, I understand. And I said, no, I don't think you understand. I don't know if I'm ever going back. And so I sat on a beach for a couple of days and I thought about it and I thought about the food and I thought about it. And so as we were flying back, I said to my husband, give 6 more months and let's make some changes. And we changed up the structure of the bakery. We hired some really great people, empowered them to make decisions, took some of the workload off myself. And just last week, I gave him 6 more months. I think what happened was I got tired, I got burnt out, and then I was able to get enough breath in me in the last 6 months that I want to keep going with this because I'm not done. And so I think the reason I'm not done is the social consumption part isn't done. My consumers are finally getting educated. When we first, you know, started this, nobody knew anything about edibles or cannabis or how to buy them. And so there wasn't there wasn't a need for a high-end product. We were kind of ahead of the curve. Now, the curve has changed a little bit and my consumer is savvy. They understand about the difference between a distillate edible and a full spectrum edible. And so we're getting traction now like we've never had. And so that's exciting too. We are really well respected because we've been around the longest and we do a high quality product. And I'm like the budtender's favorite. You know, every time we talk to budtenders, they're like, I just want you to know you're the one I go to. And so there's this kind of cult following that's kind of caught up with us in the last 6 months. And so that's really exciting too. You know, we're like, I told my husband, I go, it feels like we're a 12-year overnight success suddenly.
Nice. Yeah. No.
So I think that's it. I still have fire in my belly. I still have strength in my shoulders. I can still lift up 50 pounds of flour. I love my crew. I got to tell you, that is really something that's never happened before here in 12 years. I've never had a team that has worked so hard, so talented. Everybody on my team has a different talent. My sales guy, Dominic, he came in about 1.5, 2 years ago because of COVID. He was a lead singer of a band and he couldn't perform anymore. He is now the lead singer of my bakery. Not only does he do the sales and, you know, do some of the delivery, we go watch his band play, and he's a dynamic personality, and he's changed up how sales happen here. And so that took a big burden off of me. Hovering was doing all of the deliveries around the state. We hired a delivery person to do that. I hired a person in the bakery the first time I ever handed over my recipes in 12 years to this gal who works for me named Hannah. She's so young and so talented and has such a grounding effect in the bakery. And like every single person here now that I have working for me, they have talents outside of the bakery, which makes it so exciting for us all to work together.
Yeah.
I have a weirdo band of strong women who just, they're so strange and they're so strong and they're so talented. And that inspires me every day to keep showing up. They are fantastic. And so all of those things, I guess probably what happened was when you get burned out, you have to decide, am I stepping away or am I pivoting? And we just pivoted and it's been really good for us.
Oh man. You know, that's beautiful. Like it reminds me so much of where I was and with my wife, Cindy, in the last year of our retail bakery, you know, and like with, like we were like you, it's like, we were going to go sit on the beach. And kind of like, okay, if we're going back, we have to change this, right? We have to change this completely. And in our case, we had an offer come in to buy us out. So that short circuited the decline and the rebound, you know, but we saw it. Like we were 2 months away. We were like, okay, we're going to muddle through this till Christmas. Then we need to have a rethink. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so exactly. I'm so happy for you that you had it. And just to hear your excitement after that is amazing. Like that's I think what everybody wishes for, you know.
I think it's all about breath. I think what I'm figuring out is that, you know, often we don't hire a person because we don't have the budget for it. But I'll tell you, I didn't hire the person that Hannah, the position, my kitchen lead. I just kept putting that off and putting it off. One, because I knew I was going to have to pay enough to really make sure I got somebody good in. And I just kept putting it off because we didn't have any money. And I found out I would rather go without anything than breath. I need somebody to be there for me. I need somebody to help carry the load. And once I realized like that Hannah could do it, that breath started flowing to my brain. And once the blood and the oxygen started hitting the old cranium again, I was like, oh yeah, I love what I do here. But without any air, it's really hard to like what you do, without any rest, without any time off. And so you just have to somehow figure out how to make the sacrifices to hire the people in place so you can have time away from your business. I think that most business owners really struggle with that because it's so hard to hire an employee. It's so hard to lose them. It's hard to trust. But I think that, you know, believe me, we've gone through employees here. We've gone through bad employees. We've lost good employees, you know, all the things that happen as owners. But when you get a good crew and you can build on that good crew, you got to make sure you don't hire anybody to upset that crew either. That's something I've really learned, right? And so one of the things we've done here is we've started doing stages. And the stage is really about my crew. I bring in, if somebody wants to work here, I bring somebody in for one day and I have them work with my crew all day long. And then at the end of the day, I sit down with my crew and they decide if we're hiring that person or not. It has been such a successful turn. It has been so brilliant for our company. I can't believe I didn't think of it years ago because they're the ones who have to work with these people. And they, and by the way, when they go on breaks that first day, they're hearing that person that comes in for the stage, they're either trying to impress or, you know, they're trying to bond. And so they talk to the rest of the staff in a way that they'll never talk to me in an interview.
Totally.
So that's all I need. And I have a couple of people here that are absolute radars for is somebody going to work out or not.
That's beautiful. No, it really is. And I love the thought of like, you need to build breath into this and you need to regain it when you've lost it. That's so powerful.
You know, it's just like food, you know, food has to rest sometimes, right? You can mix the crap out of it. You can make it not tough. You can toughen it. And that's the thing is I don't want to be tough and out of breath. I want to be juicy and full of life. And you can't let your business kill you. And so I think, again, I know that that's not everybody's reality. I am in a very special position. My husband and I work together. I have 24 hours a day support. My partner is here with me every day, sees what I'm going through, helps me carry the weight. I know that there's a lot of business owners who do not have that. And so I think that's probably one of the most successful parts of this business is that my husband and I are on the same page. This is our second business together. So we communicate really well. We never fight in front of our employees. I mean, there's just no drama. He is Mr. Laid Back Buddhist, and I am kind of this crazy, you know, little firecracker. And somehow the two of us just really balance out together. And even in our business, that's how we approach our business. He is calm, cool, and collected. That's why he's the CEO. I am the CCO, the chief creative, because I am full of personality.
You betcha. Yeah. I've got some friends in Alberta that I think will be listening to this. And will recognize themselves in this as well. Hey, you got to have the one calm, cool, and the other one the dynamo, and that's awesome. Oh yeah,
and it's really interesting. We're both artists too, so that can change in our private life too. You know, like I'm not always the dynamo. Sometimes when we're in our private life, hovering is, and so that's something we've been really good about learning as a couple too. Is like if somebody's in the limelight, just let them have it. If somebody wants to take the lead, let them, because we're both doing this together and there's plenty of time for both of us. So one of the big things I think also too, being older, is our egos are not very attached to the situation. We're both really, we're just solution-based. We're like, give us the data and then let's come up with a solution. The histrionics can happen later.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, so cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time here for the education and the inspiration, because this has been such a great chat.
Oh, it's been so great chatting with you, Mark. And I just really appreciate you taking time with me today. I love talking. We hardly talked about food, but I love talking about cannabis and can talk about it all day long.
It's coming out in the talk, right? Like you are making food. Like there's no two ways about it. This is not what you're doing is so different than a gummy factory. It's not even close. And I'm really glad to get to know a bit about it, for sure.
I would really like to say that too, to anybody who's thinking about getting in cannabis, and every state and province is different. So check out your laws and all of that. But if you're going to go into this, do something because you love it. A lot of people go into this industry trying to make their millions of dollars, and they get especially people who think, oh, edibles are going to be really easy. So they pay a co-packer to do gummies for them. They're going to be very disappointed. That's not a good way to do it. Do something you love. It's really true. Every day I sit down with my crew and we do family meal at lunchtime because we can do it here, because we're not a gummy factory, because we make food here. So, you know, this week we had stuffed bell peppers and we had some meatloaf and we had a salad bar and all of those things. And so if you really want to go into edibles, surround yourself with a team that loves you and make sure that you're doing the food that you love to do, because it is going to be all consuming all the time.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate this.
Thanks, Mark. I enjoyed my time with you.
Wow, what a talk. I'm still reeling from all of the implications of everything that Laura and Hovering have to go through to bring their cookies and cakes to market, even when what she's doing is 100% legal. Like the fact that she is forced to work entirely in cash and the implications of that is just astounding to me. You know, it just, like, it kind of tells me, or I'm jumping ahead here, but it goes to show for me, like, how the authorities can say something is allowed and still set things up so that it's nearly impossible to do. You know, and we go through that, like the smaller cottage bakers especially go through that, where it's like, oh yeah, you're allowed to do this, but we're going to make it so difficult that it's kind of, you'll never make money at it or whatever. And it's that times 100 for Laura, it seems. Yet there's so many takeaways for all of us, right? Like I was moved when Laura talked about breath and that she needed to build breath into the business. And I was right there with her when she talked about being 6 months away from quitting and how, you know, sometimes you just need to sign up for another 6 months. I'm glad she's renewed her agreement with Hovering for another 6 months, and hopefully she'll do it again and do it again. You know, whatever it takes to find a bit of space and a bit of joy in the work that we're doing, eh? Like whatever method it takes, it's a good one. And if this 6 month contract for her is going to help her push through this dip, then great. Did you catch the part at the end where she talked about building the team and getting her staff involved in the hiring process? Like, I love that part. I've been thinking a lot lately about how we tend to lump all of the heavy work of running a business on our own shoulders as owners, right? And when it's something the team might be better at than we are, actually. You know, back at Orange Boot Bakery, our baker, Tisha, was a very good teacher. She is a very good teacher, and she's awesome with working with new bakers. When I finally asked her to mentor new hires at the bakery, you know, so a new hire would come in and say, well, instead of me showing you everything, well, I'll get Tisha to show you everything. The bakery ran a lot smoother, you know, it really did, because, well, Tisha's just really, really good at it. And in Laura's case, when she got her staff to share how they felt about working with a prospective new hire, things got easier for everyone. I thought that was just brilliant. So I enjoyed talking with Laura and a whole bunch. And I hope you enjoyed the conversation as well. I hope you were able to take away a few ideas for your own bakery, because, like, that's why we're here, right? To learn from each other, you know, so our businesses run smoother and we can bring more joy and more good eats to our neighbors. So until next time, when we're back with another conversation and some other bakery talk, have a great week. Work hard, bake lots, happy baking. Bye-bye.